What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray. Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
a Major League Basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Major League Basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast, recording today right after game one. The Lakers lose 99-90. My name is Tom Z, joined as always by Tim, aka Sadness McBasketball. How you feeling, Tim?
Not good. Bad. Negative.
Not good, feel bad.
Everything bad. The only good thing that happened was I beat Clipper Daryl in Daily Fantasy and like a head.
Hey-o.
That's the only good thing that happened.
Well, you gotta carry at least that torch. Yeah, you're putting in the work where the Lakers maybe weren't, Tim. With it's not just the L, it is how you lose. And this did remind me in some ways of a couple of those game ones, but there was a bit of an intensity issue and a game plan issue I think we'll dive deeper into. But, you know, just kind of laying out the lay of the land, Tim. LeBron started strong, started shooting the three early, looked good, felt optimistic, even though Andre Drummond was, you know, surrendering some points and they were exploiting him in the pick and roll. He was getting some offensive rebounds early. You started to feel, okay, maybe this Drummond, you know, starting thing isn't so bad. And if they can't, you know, punish that the way we thought they could, this could be good. But the, you know, second, third shifts of Drummond, he played a really long the third shift there in the third quarter that I would have preferred wasn't so long, you know, but Vogel did make the adjustment to move AD to five, but it didn't seem to help much. He seemed to be pretty disconnected on both ends of the court all game, ended 5 for 16, a game worst minus 18, only 13 points in 39 minutes. So it's, you know, something that they didn't play at their peak, but I thought LeBron looked okay. I thought Schroeder, despite having an efficient 5 for 7, had some really bad turnovers, 4 of them, and just dumb fouls, you know. It wasn't looking too pretty there for almost anyone. KCP 1 for 7. So Bron looked better, but I don't know what anything positive, I guess you'd maybe take away first. And then we'll dive into the bad things they didn't adjust to.
The silence isn't because there's an audio issue or a Wi-Fi issue. The silence is because there's not a lot of good to take away from this game, man. Like, there's the game plan side of it. There's the execution, performance, shot making side of it. And the Lakers went 0-for-2. We covered some of like the keys to watch in the game, and it was like, look for these players at this point in time. You know, make Ayton catch below the free throw line, all that stuff. Make the Suns not take corner threes. None of them went right. If I'm trying to find positive things, I do think the Drummond minutes looks better than I thought he played well. I think he caught flack as he does every game on Twitter. Drummond played well. Drummond did his job. He got, I think, beat on like one hedge, but it's not his fault that the Suns are really good at attacking a specific screen coverage and the Lakers, he just gave them that screen coverage all game long. So Drummond on the boards, I think, did a good job. He had 7 offensive rebounds, 5 for 7 shooting. He even had a steal. He had a block. There were a couple rotations he missed. There was a period of time, second, third quarter, where the Lakers just were not getting back on defense in transition. And he was part of several of those plays in terms of not getting back or not rotating in those kind of secondary break sorts of situations. But I actually thought his minutes were good, and he played 19 in this game. I think if he plays 19 moving forward, I don't hate that. I think that's one positive I take away from this game, because I don't have – I'm looking like down by – player by player, I don't have a lot of positives to talk about for LeBron or AD or Kuzma or KCP. I thought Caruso, he had a stretch. He took two charges and then a third play where there was contact, no foul. I think it should have been a no call. Loose ball, LeBron recovered and got a dunk and – or a layup and one. I think he missed the free throw. But Caruso's defense – in the right situations was good. On Booker, he didn't do nearly as well. KCP didn't do nearly as well. That was a situation where Wes or Kuz, as we talked about on the pod, would have been better matchups, and we didn't see much of that. So I don't know. I'm rambling a little bit. I am still trying to process everything. As you were talking earlier, I was like really quickly going through some synergy clips just to like double check some stuff. Cause watching live, you know, we get into the heat of things. But I don't have a lot of positives. I guess the optimistic take for me is that shooting 27% on threes, shooting 61% on free throws. That's our key it. Guys making bad decisions, missing shots they should be making, and yep. with a game plan that, like, we'll dig into it, literally was almost the opposite of what we said should have happened. And still, this team only lost by 9, and it was a game until the last, like, minute or two. And we're a couple, like, Wes had some open threes. Caruso had two open threes within like a minute of each other that would have cut the lead to 4 if he hit them both, with I think 3 or 4 minutes left. So it was a game despite injury scares on both sides, everything going wrong from a game plan and execution standpoint. So I feel optimistic because I know the Lakers can and should win this series. This team shouldn't beat the Lakers 3 more times if the Lakers clean up what they need to clean up on a game planning side, and then, you know, in general, they should shoot better. This is probably the low end of their free throw and 3-point shooting. But if they don't clean up the game plan stuff, and we get, you know, mostly better shot making, but still fighting an uphill battle with the game plan, it's very much a series. And I may need to buy my game 7 ticket because I'll be in Phoenix for game 7 if it happens, which I'm hoping it does. It does not. So that's my optimistic take. It's only uphill from here. Like, there's everything went wrong.
Yeah, I think that's kind of to me where it lands, where, you know, until a couple of those Caruso kind of garbage time threes at the end, I think the Lakers role players were 1 for 11 or something even worse from three outside of LeBron. So, I mean, there are definitely nights that's not, you know, an outlier for this team, but it's the lowest possible outcome for them. And you didn't see too many of those falling where oftentimes, even if 2 or 3 of those do, that's a closer game. And again, the free throw shooting, we were physical. You know, we got DeAndre Ayton into foul trouble in the first half, kind of shrunk down his minutes because he was what the poison the Lakers picked in that pick and roll coverage to force him to be able to catch, finish over the top. Yep. I mean, you saw that play where Jay Crowder cut it to him underneath the basket with no one around him, and he didn't even know. And he dribbled into a kick out 3, and then, you know, I think ended up turning it over eventually.
Right.
But it there's the lack of awareness from DeAndre Ayton that you can continue to exploit. And it's the high end of outcomes to me in terms of performance for him, because now with Chris Paul noticeably injured, noticeably favoring that right arm, unable to pull up and shoot and rise with that normal follow through, even dribbling, you do not need to pursue him the same way in the pick and roll. So with DeAndre Ayton, at least. Now with Booker, you need to figure out some of those, you know, like less conducive outcome screen coverages for the Suns there, because we were feeding them right into their hands, right? Yep. Right into their strengths. So you get cut that out and get Chris Paul and treat him with a little bit less respect and make him finish. And I think you can start to kind of cut out the Ayton, you know, positives, because he was good tonight for them in a way that I don't think is as repeatable as they hope it that it is.
Yeah, the game plan to make Ayton not go 10 for 11 or whatever he did, 10 for 11 isn't Ayton specific, it's screen coverage specific. He was a finisher today. He had some good putback attempts, but he was a finisher in transition on putbacks, catching lobs, getting dump offs. It in the same way that Drummond wasn't the issue guarding him or AD wasn't the issue guarding him, he wasn't what made those plays. He finished well, and he's a very good finisher at the rim. He's, I think, 12th in our finishing at rim rating, at B-ball index, difficulty adjusted finishing. He's a good player, but in this series, he is a symptom more than he is the issue itself. Did you get a chance to watch the Clippers lose to Dallas yesterday?
Did.
The Clippers were double teaming Luka with Pat Beverly as his primary ball handler or primary defender, who Luka can see right over, and sending a second guy in a soft kind of trap. They weren't actually pressuring him. They weren't forcing him to make quick decisions. They weren't forcing him to pass off his back foot. It was, we're basically just going to give you all the time you want to attack our defense of three defenders with four wide receivers out there. And that's basically what the Lakers were doing against Phoenix tonight. How many times did we see Booker or Chris Paul run off a ball screen and not look to turn the corner, just run from sideline to sideline, just attack, just go laterally, not trying to score for themselves, but buying time, just like we talked about last pod, for Ayton to get from the three-point line to a foot from the rim before he needs to catch the ball. And the longer they have, the more time they have to set up all of the positioning and all the angles the way they want, the worse the Lakers defense is going to be. And we saw that in game. This is also something that we talked about pregame. We've seen this team be really good at this on the season. Looking at, I was able to get some second spectrum data from a source, which is, for anyone who's not familiar, this is the data that the Los Angeles Lakers have. This is the data the Phoenix Suns have. This is the data the NBA teams are using to build game plans. Of every type of screen coverage that has been used this season against Chris Paul and Devin Booker in pick and roll situations on any sort of volume, more than, I think the minimum was like 75 or more times. This is like hundreds of possessions. Of those four or five different major options, doing what the Lakers did tonight, that, you know, go over the screen and then have your big man in that catch soft hedge, was by far the worst way to defend them. They picked it apart all season long. So I understand, you know, we like to talk adjustments. This shouldn't need to be an adjustment. This should have been part of the game plan. We saw it in the regular season against the Lakers. So watching our film versus them, watching their recent film, or looking at any of their numbers should have led to a different result than what we saw tonight. So this is just one of many examples where, like, everything went poorly, but there's clear upside. This isn't a situation where the Lakers did everything they could and the Suns just beat it, and we don't have answers from here. There's no next step. There are plenty of options. The Lakers just picked the worst one to start the game, and it's really disappointing. And they actually followed through with that pretty much the entire game. I think late fourth quarter, like 2 minutes left, they started being a little bit more aggressive, and even then it was more of a soft trap than a hard trap. So go back, listen to the last pod for anyone new. We walk through exactly why you want to be trapping, but force those ball handlers to get the ball out quickly and not buy time. We let them buy time and get everybody where they wanted. If you force the ball to get out quickly and go to Ayton outside the free throw line, the Lakers defense is in a much better situation than when he's able to get the ball on a lob or standing right next to the rim. And every single one of Ayton's roles in that game, in game one, was below the free throw line. Every single one. I looked at the film post game just to make sure my eyes weren't deceiving me in game. Every single one. So this is important. They need to fix this. I was surprised because at halftime, actually before the game, Vogel talked about in his pregame availability, we need to be able to be aggressive on these two ball handlers. So I was like, heck yeah, you know, he gets it. This is, you know, that's what we're talking. That's if that's the verbiage, that's the way you're describing your screen coverages, you know, trapping is that screen cover. So I assume that's what was going to happen. Didn't happen first half. Going into the second half, did you hear the sideline reporter say, oh, I talked to Frank Vogel. Something he said is, you know, we're definitely going to be more aggressive on those screen. We need to change those screen coverages up. And I was like, great. You know, we spotted them, a dozen point lead at halftime or whatever it was. But at least we figured it out. No. I'm sorry. Eight. Yeah. Hang on. We won seven. Eight. Yeah, it was eight. So at least, you know, 8 point deficit. But if we fix the screen coverages, there's a chance to win this game. And then they didn't change it. He said, you know, this is that the one thing she talked about with him at halftime that they shared on the national media, you know, on TV, wasn't something they actually changed. So I don't know why he would tell her that. So that was crazy. I was DMing Jovan Buha, who listens to the pod. He's great. He has his own pod. Great Lakers media follow. And he was just saying that Vogel acknowledged some of the stuff we were just talking about. And then he spelled out, He didn't spell out adjustments, but said they need to do a better job of countering attention on AD, which is something we've talked about. Coverages versus Booker and Chris Paul. And I guess we'll just have to see what that looks like in game two. But the Lakers at this point should be well aware of at least that this didn't work. So you'd rather, you know, especially with Chris Paul injured, missing time in this game, you want to go up 1-0. But if for the next however many games the Lakers are running a better game plan, they can certainly win the series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident about the defensive matchups. It's just, it's always late. You know, the adjustments that Frank will do, I'm confident of it because I believe in his system and his philosophy. And when, you know, it definitely has a championship to show for it. But in this game, you definitely start yourself off a little bit off on the wrong foot. But overall, I thought the Lakers' rotations were pretty much what I expected. A little bit of THT there in that first half. He went 1-for-4 with a rebound, an assist, steal, and plus one overall in 7 minutes. But it ended up being Wes Matthews who got the majority of those minutes. Ended up on Chris Paul toward the end of the game, third, fourth quarter, after he had come in a little bit hobbled. Saw Wes provide a good amount of size on Chris Paul, who's, you know, had some good plays setting guys up. He's still going to play through that pain, but you got to make him into a scorer. And I thought they did a good job. And you saw the Lakers, you know, keep this game close when it probably shouldn't have been, to be perfectly honest, Tim. So a lot of it, you know, I'm confident in the defensive rotations or in adjustments, excuse me. But we still do have to talk about the offense and the way that the Lakers got a lot of their shots tonight. And it didn't look great with AD in the post. You know, there were a couple times where he would settle for that jumper. He would try to put the ball on the floor and get to his, you know, his floater spot, but it didn't really look in flow and in rhythm. And something starting to worry me. Even though we did see him play a little bit better, he's got to get himself more involved, and I think he knows it. So offensively, Tim, to me, what would help a great amount is Marc Gasol minutes, go figure. And it's not Trez's fault, because I thought Trez provided the Lakers with some scoring punch in there. And I don't think he was losing, you know, those minutes by a great amount, that it's, you know, his fault or Frank's fault for deploying him in the first place. I think Trez had good shifts, but
yeah, 4-for-5 from the line, 3 rebounds, 2 of them offensive, 2 steals. That, I mean, plus 2, 12 points in 15 minutes.
But he didn't look good against DeAndre Ayton in the stretch where he played at the end of the first quarter. He did look good against Dario Saric. So it's to me, right, it's just, hey, you want to find Marc Gasol in a little 3 minutes at the end of the first quarter, open up the floor a little bit more for Anthony Davis. You could still do 4 or 5 pick and rolls if you want. Just have him pop, you know, bring Ayton out. Like, just, it's a no-brainer. And I know smart Laker fans are just wondering, when this team was looking like a number one seed with Marc Gasol starting, it's we can't let Vogel forget. And he is visibly frustrated, right, by how much we asked for Mark, I bet, and how much we asked him about the center rotation. But we got to keep on him, because it, like, you can't forget how good that lineup is, part because that spacing is just so much better. It's not like they're materially different players than they were 4 months ago, right?
Yeah, we're not speculating on what it can look like. This isn't a Damian Jones push. This isn't go sign this player, I think he could do well. This isn't, hey, here's a cool play I thought of that you should try. This is something like the Lakers use those lineups. And that starting group that we had at the beginning of the season with Mark in there was a top five. I think actually now it's sixth best lineup in all of the NBA with our B-ball index stabilized lineup data. So you pump every single lineup with the same amount of like average possessions so that the small samples stabilize a little bit. You don't have crazy outliers. Even with that thrown into every single lineup, that Mark lineup, which did get a bunch of time, this isn't a small sample, was one of the best in the entire NBA. And we know why. We've seen why. So it seems like it can work. Like you're saying, the Trez minutes against Saric, Saric, I think there's like an SH pronunciation there. Yeah, apologies to him. Trez on him, I think, is a good matchup. Trez on Cam Johnson, which we saw a little bit, I don't feel as good about. And we talked about that on our big man, you know, playoff rotation pod a couple weeks ago. Against Ayton, I don't like that, especially when the Lakers aren't running the right screen coverages. Trez isn't going to be able to recover from that catch, get all the way back to Ayton and contest him at the rim. That's just not, it's not going to work. So finding better ways to get him, maybe he doesn't play 15 minutes, maybe he does, but make those 15 minutes the right 15 minutes against the right opposing players. But in general, I would say that the benefit that you get from Gasol is worth taking Harrell's minutes down a bit. Maybe Drummond only played 19. I think if that's 15, you get Gasol another 15, and then you put 80 at the five for the other 18 minutes. That might be a more optimal way to run your team, because we saw the team just not be able to do anything, especially against the zone. Let's talk about that zone defense, because there's a lot that the Lakers struggled with today that Phoenix did. The one thing that wasn't on film, like on huge samples, that they should have known about was that 2-3 zone. But that 2-3 zone was something the Suns used against the Lakers in the regular season. But that zone was used against a group. I think it was Drummond, Schroeder, THT, AD, and I think Caruso were out there at the same time. And that group just had no idea how to attack the zone.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think with LeBron out there, you can feel a little bit more confident, and they didn't run it much against LeBron, but with that group, it wasn't looking good. And that's somewhere where you get a Marcus All in the game, and he's such an old, like a vet with that IQ, and can get guys cutting, get guys screening, moving around, manipulate that zone. That would have been a way to attack it, or try to penetrate a little bit and be organized about positioning, because it just looks so disorganized. And that's something we're going to see more of from Phoenix, because when the Lakers attacked it this game, it just didn't work at all.
Yeah, I wonder if you might start to see as well some Ben McLemore minutes coming, just because you can, you know, space him out. If 3-point shooting continues down this road, it's an issue you need to address in some form, because I feel like the Lakers played not great defense and they surrendered 99 points. So it's the offense. Yeah. It's keeping up, getting efficient shots, you know, not forcing out bad mid-rangers and not expecting to shoot what you did in the bubble last year, but still just, you know, pushing the pace a little bit too. There are a couple hit-aheads with LeBron and Schroeder I'd like to see a little more from, and just the people streaking up the sides. Yeah.
Yeah. Transition in general went very much in Phoenix's favor. And part of that was turnovers by the Lakers, live ball turnovers resulting in those runouts. Some of it, like we saw the one play, it was a 4-on-2 for like a whole like 8 seconds before the Suns scored, and guys are just not getting back. Some of the Lakers players, LeBron and AD specifically, if they are the one guy who's not back yet, they'll just not get back. They'll try to cherry pick if they feel they're not back in time. And instead of standing right at the rim, you can, you know, at least try to get back. And then if you're at half court when the ball gets rebounded, you still have a head start. But I thought that was detrimental to the team. Fast break points, actually, it was only 16-9 in Phoenix's favor. It just felt like way more than that. Points in the paint, another key for this game that we talked about, 52-44 in the Suns' favor. Everything went bad. Yeah, everything went poorly.
It didn't go well in the places where we were highlighting. And again, we put it out there. If you see Trez early against Ayton, you know, we didn't feel great about that. I wonder, too, if we might see a little bit of Keefe as well, because he played quite a bit. And I know different circumstances, but he hasn't been shooting the ball great. Give him a look, because, you know, these guys, he can rebound better. I'll tell you that, because the Lakers throwing out there this big lineup and they're not rebounding. So there's some effort, energy stuff. You know, he does work on those offensive rebounds, defensive glass at least.
Yep. And when the Lakers went small with Anthony Davis at the center, which I think will be more and more of a part of the series as we move along, they often had Schroeder, Caruso, KCP out there with like LeBron and AD, and that group just was not rebounding well. So that's the type of thing where like what made the Lakers so dominant last year when they went small was that they were still big. They still had like LeBron at the three and Keith at the four, and these guys up and down the lineup that like would be bigger than their matchups, even if they weren't playing like a traditional center. And when you play that, like basically like three guards, LeBron and AD, there's so much finesse and then a lack of size and a lack of boxing out in that group that can make it really difficult to rebound on that end. So that was just those instances. And I think just in general, I would have preferred to see Kuz and Wes, one of them kind of out there to check Booker or to at least provide some size in lineups like those.
Yeah, we did see a little bit of Kuz on Booker, at least for a couple possessions, maybe because of a switch. Mm-hmm. But I keep advocating for the size on Booker. You know, I thought, again, the Lakers, like I mentioned in the preview pod, fell into, you know, they didn't give up free throws in the first half and then gave up a ton there in that third and just started over fouling, really just undisciplined basketball on a lot of different levels. But again, the 9-point lead, it feels like this game should have been 25 to me, because Jay Crowder 0 for 7 from 3. You know, I expect him to make, you know, two of those, you know, usually, even if he's not shooting great. But that's a good thing for the Lakers. Cam Johnson 2 for 5. Okay, that's 40%. That's fine. They'll live with that. But it's, you know, the bigger picture, like Miles Bridges 4 for 12. It was Booker and Ayton combined for 55 of 99 points.
And six, Booker, eight assists each.
Right. Yeah, well, Paul had 8 assists. DeAndre Ayton did not have an assist.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But he did have 16 rebounds.
Booker and Paul each had 8 assists. My bad.
Right. No, but that's to my point. It's Booker and Ayton, and, you know, everybody else was not as impactful as the Suns would like them to be. And, you know, you live with some of those shots. Cam Johnson pulling up, hitting mid-range shots after a closeout. Like, okay, that's good. You live with those. But again, I didn't think the Lakers played a particularly great defense, and they held the team to 99. So with the diminished Chris Paul was injured. Absolutely. And so maybe he gets, but he got injured in the second half or no, second quarter. Right. So it was pretty early. And he came back in and wasn't great. He had a few turnovers as well. He only had one turnover. Strangely, it seemed like more, but he was losing the ball. I just, you know, it's not a great game for the Lakers. Of course, you don't feel good after this, but they did this last year. I feel like they should have lost by much more than 9 points with, you know, a puncher's chance and a couple of threes away from having a 5-point deficit with like 3 minutes left. That's with LeBron's on your team, you know, you feel good about those moments. But hopefully he's 100% as well after. What did you think about Chris Paul's little, you know, pull the shoulder down as the guy jumps to get the rebound?
I did not like it. I didn't think that was
pretty dirty.
It was kind of a dirty play.
It's dirty.
And I think that kind of play happens with some regularity. We just don't notice it unless someone actually gets hurt. But that's still not a play that I doubt the league will do anything about it. But that he clearly hooked it. You can look at the screenshots. He like connected both of his arms. It wasn't just one arm was hooking LeBron's arm. He had the second arm holding his own arm to like make sure that LeBron was in that lock. So I didn't like that. I thought it was interesting. So Trez ran in and knocked Payne to the ground. I thought it was interesting that Caruso got a tech for hitting the ball away from Payne, which is something we see. I saw, I think, like Westbrook or somebody do that yesterday. And in 99% of instances, I don't see anything called there. But Caruso picked up a tech for that. Payne got his two techs for two different things. I mean, as that was happening, I was simultaneously thinking, God, I hope LeBron's okay, because if he's not, we're done.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I was like, hey, like, if Payne and Trez get into it and those two get like ejected or suspended or something, like, I think that's a net positive for the Lakers. Like, we have an extra center off the bench we can bring in. They don't have that much ball handling or
playmaking. They'll be helping us out. Jeez. No offense, Trez. You had a nice night, but maybe get some Mark into there. Guaranteed, or at least more AD at the 5 minutes. But you know, I mean, I don't really care if AD at the 5 minutes happen if he's going to be playing like this, because he has to look in the mirror, and frankly I think he will, because you know, he had some comments recently about not caring what people think. It's fine and good, but at the end of the day, man, you gotta show up and play like a superstar in the playoffs. I get all, everyone has rough circumstances going in, short off season, whatever's going on, you got to overcome adversity. And even if you don't care about the haters, you need to dig deep, man, because that performance is not going to cut it. You just dropped 42 on the same team without LeBron. I thought LeBron was good tonight, which actually makes me optimistic. Even though he was a little banged up, I thought he got the offense flowing. And, you know, more like that, our pet KCP play works, Tim. Got AD a lob out of the timeout there in the first. You're like, oh, okay, AD's starting to get involved. And then we saw no more of that. Mm-hmm. So, like, why can't we run sets more frequently instead of just flowing to this ISO ball time after time? It doesn't make sense to me.
It does not to me either, because the Lakers, like, they have the right plays. We can run, like, we've seen the team run the plays that would get AD involved, and they haven't really gone to those. And they'll run out lineups that have multiple non-shooters, and AD kind of is included here. They'll sag off of him. He hasn't had a good three-point shooting season, but him with lots of, like, multiple non-shooters out there, guys just standing around, if there's Trez or Drummond in a dunker spot, if it's like on the same side as AD on the perimeter, like, he can't drive. We were texting a little bit pregame about, like, can AD go off in the mid-range? And, like, if he can be that guy, like, this team's got no chance. Like, is it an anomaly? What, can he flip that switch? And we didn't see him quite flip that switch yet. And if the Suns can make him be just a jump shooter, that's a win for them. I don't know if it'll win him the series or win him a game or multiple games. Well, we saw him win one. But that's the best version of AD for the Suns is AD as just a tall jump shooter. When he's attacking the rim, that's when he's at his best. And we see that more when the floor is spaced. So like him and Gasol with him at power forward, or him just as the center with shooting out there is the way to try to unlock that. So if you're not going to run the sets, at least get the right combinations of players out there to try to do a little bit more. We saw him in the post tonight for the Lakers. They had three post-ups where there no help came. They scored 2 points. Trez had the one hook shot. There were five plays where the Suns sent help and the Lakers didn't counter, and AD got hit. Cam Johnson came from his backside, fouled him. He got one free throw he made. And then there was one play the Lakers did counter where Caruso set a pin and flare screen that got Wes Matthews a pretty good three-point look, and he just missed it. But that's like 1 for 6, basically, in terms of countering post-help. This was another one of the items that Frank post-game said they need to do a better job of adjusting to. But the verbiage he used was that, like, the teammates need to be smarter, or the teammates need to be better. It wasn't, we need to game plan better, or we need to be more organized. It seemed more on the players from what he was saying. So we'll see what happens. That's concerning. And that's another part of, like, 80 in the posts, 80, like, that's one way to get him going. Running those plays where he can roll is a way to get him going. We didn't see much of that. And then him just scoring well in isolation is another way that we just didn't, like, he just didn't score well today. And he wasn't assertive. So he's got to step up. We need to, like, if he can win those minutes against Ayton at the five, Phoenix is in trouble. We can't have Trez trying to beat up on small Phoenix and also say, oh, well, Mark would be good against a small Phoenix lineup. And then I'll say, ah, well, AD, you know, he's not going to win on the boards against Ayton, but once Phoenix is small, he'll do well. Like, we have to be able to win those lineups against big Phoenix as well. And AD's part of that. He just was getting, you know, Ayton was carving out space in the paint for offensive rebounds against Anthony Davis. So that's, he's got to win that physical battle a little bit more moving forward.
Yeah, and this is not the kind of performance where you think, oh man, I just got to make more better shots. It's no, you got to look yourself up and down at the performance, not getting a rebound the first half, you know, just kind of floating around out there, not even really, you know, pressuring ball handlers the same, or, you know, kind of switching with any kind of sense of urgency and throwing a body around. It was frustrating to see, but you know, I don't know if it can get much worse for AD individually on the matchup space, on the matchup end. So, Tim, I also think these rotations, we got to figure out, because either you play THT a second shift, right? Or you know, what was that about to me? Because to me, Frank is locked in his ways a lot of times, right? But then he quickly just went, no, I guess we got to get Wes in there. Like, it should have been Wes to begin with. Mm-hmm. We both think THD can get some run in this series, but maybe at the beginning of the second quarter or the end of the first, like we were talking, you know, guarding Booker. But it didn't exactly go down that way in the second half either. And we saw Booker start to go a little more ISO. And credit to him, I thought he made some nice contested shots, made right basketball plays, and Ayton was able to rebound enough to get them extra possessions. But do you expect to see THT, or should we go like full Wes and shrink this rotation down a little bit, make more sense?
If it's a zero sum game between the two of them, I'll take more Wes time. I think Wes had 12 minutes, THT had 7. If you can give Wes 19. I feel a bit better about that, but I agree with you that there will be opportunities in the series, late first quarter, early second quarter, go attack when LeBron's sitting and Ayton's sitting, and try to get an extra ball handle in there to go attack. But if every time THT goes in, Phoenix just zones up and then the Lakers aren't prepared to attack it in the right ways, that's going to be troublesome. But at the same time, a guy that can get to the rim really well and finish at the rim really well is someone that can attack a zone. You just have to move the zone first and then skip it over to him and then have him attack a gap that's created by those shifting to defenders. It can't be just go ISO against the front of the zone and try to beat him. So there's opportunity, but if they don't approach it the right way, they may just be better off not playing him.
Yeah. Yep. It was a disappointing game, but couldn't help but feel, I still feel a little optimistic, especially with Chris Paul looking a little diminished. Now, who knows, once he gets some therapy, a couple days rest, maybe he starts to feel better or learn how to play with that injury, Tim. But I do not feel my prediction pre-series has changed at all from Lakers in 6, because I think this was baked into my prediction. Do you feel a little worried about your Lakers in 5 now? We would have to win the next 4 consecutive games.
Oh, I have to. Yeah, absolutely. I feel not great about it. I think Lakers in 6 or 7 is now more likely.
Okay.
But to your point, Chris Paul, if Chris Paul's not healthy and the Lakers figure any of this out, and just the shot making is normal, it doesn't even have to be great. It just has to be kind of normal for the shot quality they're able to generate, the Lakers should win this series. They need poor shot making or continued poor game plans for multiple games to not beat this team if Chris Paul isn't Chris Paul. He's such a huge piece of what Phoenix does. So his health moving forward will be critical to their chances in this round and beyond if the Suns do make it past us.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're recording here just after the game. I definitely want to go back, watch the game again, dive into the footage with Tim and kind of get a little bit more about the counters and different things we'd like to see. So not sure how much longer you'd like to go on this one, Tim, but we can wrap it up here a little bit. We're going to go on, probably join the Timeline podcast guys, also featured on the Blue Wire Pod Network about the Suns. So, you know,
very last thing I'll share, and this is from Sam Cooper. half of the timeline pod he tweeted out last year. The Blazers beat the Lakers by 7 in game 1 and lost the series in 5. Job's not done yet. But, I mean, it's a damn good start for Phoenix. So, hey, Lakers in 5 could happen. It probably won't happen. And you don't want to get too down, but this loss feels different from that Portland loss. The Portland game was just, you know, make more shots. Make any shots and you would have won that. This feels more like the Houston loss where the Lakers went into the game and just didn't have a good game plan.
Right. Right. But then they adjusted quite quickly. And I just, I don't think we're going to see, like, you'll probably see Drummond start again in game 2.
Yeah, well, and think of Houston game 2. They started with the same big groups and it wasn't until,
halftime. So, I think they started Keefe, right?
Mm-hmm. So we'll see what that looks like. I don't know if the Lakers trust Keefe right now. We haven't really seen him.
Yeah.
When was the last time we saw him play? I don't know if he's going to make it in. Same with Gasol, honestly. I think he should play. I think we both think he should play. Is it more likely we see him or McLemore enter in this series?
It's tough.
I don't know.
It you know, a lot of it depends on what the Lakers are needing, on whether it's defense or offense. If the Suns' offense isn't quite as prolific, you know, that means the Lakers' offense doesn't need to be either, sadly. So we'll see. But eventually we're going to find out whether or not this Lakers team is able to put it together and reach the ceiling on this team that I think a lot of us Laker fans still believe in. And despite the loss, I feel confident, and maybe because of CP3's injury.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to hit the ceiling in this series, but we might go from like the basement to the first floor. I think it's more
fair enough.
Probably the odds on like what might happen. I don't think we're going to go from 0 to 100 with this group, but I don't know. On to Phoenix again. When is game 2?
Take it game by game. I don't even know. I got to look it up actually. So
on the 25th, Tuesday, what, 7 p.m. Pacific? I'm trying to convert time zones in my head. Yep. Hey, this was an afternoon game. Lakers don't do well in afternoon games.
It's true. They do not generally do well in these games. But Tim, we're going to wrap it up there. Go check us out on Twitter. You'll hear this later. But, you know, follow us. We'll be hopefully doing some more spaces at the end of games. But we'll publish this in the pod and maybe come back, you know, with some more thoughts. Try and do some more of these short pods and do it more frequently. But till next time, we'll talk to you later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.